Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased and honored that you are here with me today. We have another wonderful show in store for you with a great woman who I'm looking forward to bringing on in just a moment. Hey, did you catch my show last week with Tricia Eastman? Another wonderful conversation. If you did not get a chance to see it, make sure you go to talkradio.nyc and check out that interview as well. Okay, so let's start off, as we always do, with a blog post from a couple of years ago. And this blog post is entitled, "The Most Important Part of a Journey is Not the Destination." Going on a journey is not about a destination. Yet we often only focus on where we will end up. We rush to get there. Then we rush to get back. When we do that, we miss the most important part, for there will always be more destinations, more places to visit, more sights to see. Sometimes the journey ends up being something we did not expect. It might have certain hardships or challenges we did not count on. Or it could bring us to places that are hard for us to endure. Journeys rarely unfold exactly the way we expect. And that is the beauty of them. For it is in the traveling of the path that we become something new. Our experiences of being exposed to someplace brand new changes us in a very real way. And the time we spend traveling from one place to another also brings out sides of ourselves we rarely see in everyday life. This is one of the greatest gifts of taking a journey. It is in who we end up becoming in the process. The destination is almost secondary to the journey itself. For who we are when we leave and who we are when we return can be vastly different. This transmutation is something that cannot occur when we just stay home. When we are in an environment that is safe and sound and there is nothing to nudge us to grow and change, it is only when we expose ourselves to the world we do not know that we grow and thrive. We even learn to understand ourselves a bit better and discover the deepest parts of ourselves that are waiting in the shadows to be revealed. So the most important part of going on a journey is who we become by allowing ourselves to be exposed to a new environment. This journey is one that lasts our whole lives. Whether it is a physical journey or an internal journey, the results are the same. We become more of who and what we truly are. Are you paying attention to the journey of your life? Or are you just focused on the destination? So I wrote this blog post a couple of years ago, and I believe it was when I was reflecting on this long extended trip that my wife and I took, where because we were both working completely virtually at the time, we actually went to the west coast of the United States. We spent a month house sitting down in San Diego area, in Berkeley, and then about 3.5 to 4 weeks up in Vancouver. And neither of us had ever done anything like this before. I mean, we had done, short trips, but never we were away from home for 3 full months. And when we were in each place, we would go and explore, and we were still working during the daytime. We were working virtually, but just in the evenings and the weekends, we'd go out and explore the area. And sometimes we'd get lost looking for some place, or sometimes we'd, go someplace and we'd discover things along the way that were so beautiful. Like, I remember we went to this desert park east of San Diego called Borrego Springs. And on the way, we passed through Julian, and I had no idea, growing up into the mountains in the middle of the summer, how it was still, foggy and misty and rainy. It was just beautiful going through it. And there were a lot of instances of like unexpected twists and turns that happened over those 3 months. And so it was really a lesson for me of like not being so focused on what's the destination, where are we going? But it was more like looking at the roads and looking at the environment and looking at what's around while we're traveling to that destination. And then in looking back and reflecting over this, I realized that the same thing is true when we do our deep inner work, when we're exploring our inner landscape, that sometimes we're so focused on the destination of being healed and whole and I feel fine, that we lose track of the fact that the journey to get there is filled with beautiful, but sometimes very uncomfortable places along the way. And so being able to just recognize that, sometimes that the roads, the paths we take, they can be twisty and turny and windy, and we can end up lost, or we can end up in places we couldn't even imagine. Like, that's the real juice in life. That's the can really bring us joy. And also give us an opportunity to learn something about ourselves that when we're just in our normal day-to-day environment, there's not an opportunity for that to come up, for that to come out. And so I really appreciate it, and still to this day I'm learning to appreciate how much the quote unquote getting to the destination is as important, if not more important, than the destination itself, regardless of what that destination is. And look, I know that traveling these days is not as fun as it used to be. It's not the same kind of experience that it used to be for years, with all the things going on these days. It's traveling has lost some of its appeal because of the challenges involved. But even those challenges bring us something. And really, isn't that all just a wonderful metaphor for life? Like, isn't that just so true for life these days? That even, common day-to-day things are not necessarily so easy as they used to be. But seeing how we show up, seeing the sides of ourselves that we don't normally see, seeing the opportunity for us to maybe use some muscles that we don't often use. Like, isn't that a beautiful thing? Isn't that a great way to learn more about ourselves? So, that's my blog post from a couple of years ago. It's entitled, "The Most Important Part of a Journey is Not the Destination." And of course, you can always find my blog on theconsciousconsultant.com. And of course, on talkradio.nyc/blog. And now it is my extreme pleasure to welcome to the show writer, teacher, and Mama Yachak, Martha Travers, Dr. Martha Travers, excuse me. Dr. Travers apprenticed with the Ecuadorian Quichua elder Tatia Alberto Taxo for 22 years and spent 10 years visiting the indigenous Quechua tribe in the Andes. She holds a doctorate in English literature from the University of Michigan and teaches contemplative practices at the University of Michigan and at the Gilchrist Retreat Center and at Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore Park. In her latest book, oops, what did I do with the book? It's right here, Shamanic Teachings of the Condor. She presents Tatia Alberto's teachings as if you were one of his shamanic apprentices. She reveals the ancient mystical traditions of the Andes, traditions saved by the elders specifically for these times. These traditions of healing invite human beings to return to intimacy with nature and the natural world through initiating conversations with the elements, including the fifth element, spiritual element, the Ushai. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Dr. Travers.
Thank you, Sam. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Mm-hmm. So how does a doctorate from Michigan end up studying with an Ecuadorian Quichua elder for 22 years?
Well, of course, the answers to these questions also take many years to share, but I will give you the short version. I left teaching for a period of time to homeschool my children. I lived in the country. Mm-hmm. And my second child was born at home. I had a midwife and began learning sacred plant medicine and began studying very seriously shamanic traditions and our Native American first peoples here in the United States. Great teachers and so wise and connected. And that inspired my path. So that is how it began.
What was it that, like, what was the seed? What was the thing that got you to say, oh, I'd like to learn a little bit more about the local indigenous population or about these shamanic traditions? Was there some exposure? Was there someone you met or was it the midwife? Like what was it that kind of said, this looks interesting to me?
It was the plants in my garden.
Oh,
with plants and also crow. I had a very early powerful experience with crow, who I in North American indigenous traditions, the phrase power animal is sometimes used. Mm-hmm. And I began a relationship with the crows who came to my yard and my plants. And so to me, these paths that each of us have, although through different doorways and different traditions, are innate in our being, and something in our environment, something in our personal experience calls it up out of us. It may be another person, it may be a teacher that is a human being, but it could as easily be a teacher that is a personal experience, a difficulty someone has in their life. The plants, in my case, living in the woods, the giving birth, all of those experiences stimulated my sense of the innate beauty of human life and the sense of these very ancient teachings that our elders are, and I think of all human beings as having been indigenous once, if we go
Yep.
far enough back in our genetic ancestral line, nature has always been our teacher.
So it sounds like that connection to nature, the connection to the plants and the animals was really the thing that sort of planted the seed for you to explore this path in your particular case. So wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Travers. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to learn a whole lot more about Tati Alberto and your experiences and your teachings with him. And of course, we'll talk more about your book, Shamanic Teachings of the Condor. And I do want to make sure sometime during our interview to talk about the whole prophecy of the eagle and the condor, because that's been talked about so much. I think you have a particularly unique view of that. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over social media. And we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Martha Winona Travers, in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Dr. Martha Travers, author of the book, Shamanic Teachings of the Condor, Encounters with the Mystical Traditions of the Andes. So, Dr. Travers, so you started to study about these indigenous and shamanic cultures. How did you get connected with Tati Alberto? And how did your sort of, I would say, almost apprenticeship with him, how did that get formed?
Yeah. So, you know, there's that wise teaching that when the student is ready, the teacher arrives. And so without going looking, Tati Alberto came with a group of medicine people from the Andes and the Amazon up to the University of Michigan. They were brought by John Perkins, who... had spent a number of years working with the medicine people in South America and created an organization that at that time was called Dream Change. And he brought these teachers to the United States. Mm-hmm. In Michigan, they came to the University of Michigan to a conference on alternative medicine, and they presented their philosophy and practices a little bit, an introduction to them at that conference. I was not at that conference, but the following day, they did a number of ceremonies, 2 days of ceremonies at a lake near my home. And I was at that beautiful encounter with these traditional teachers. And that's where I met Tati Alberto.
What kinds of ceremonies were they doing? Were they healing ceremonies?
They were healing ceremonies. And the very first ceremony of the weekend was a fire ceremony that Taita Alberto conducted. And that was, I had a very powerful experience with him at that ceremony. So that was the beginning of my journey with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back by himself. He was brought by someone here in this in Southeast Michigan the following spring and taught a workshop at this person's home and invited a group of us to come down to the Andes. He said, if you really want to understand these practices, you need to come visit. You need to come live with us. Mm-hmm. And so the first time that I went was in September of 1999. With a group of about, I think maybe there were 12, 14 people. And we stayed with his family on their ancestral land.
And that was down in Ecuador?
That was in Ecuador. Mm-hmm.
I've actually been to Ecuador on vacation, but I didn't connect with the tribes when I was down there. It's such beautiful country and just amazing, but way, way high up when you're in the Andes. Those mountains are huge. What was it like for you the first time going down to Ecuador and being with him and his family? And that must have been a real, I don't want to say culture shock, but it must have been a real difference of seeing the way these people live compared to what we're used to here in the United States.
Difference in some ways, yes. Culture shock, not really in my personal experience of it, but some very important, of course, differences. One being that I noticed initially flying up out of Detroit, where when you look down at the landscape, everything is arranged in squares, and then flying into Quito at night, seeing the lights that were moving up the mountains in a spiraling, snaking fashion. And the softness of those lights compared to the lights in North America. I don't know what their lights are like now in Quito, whether they're using the same that we use. But in that at that time, they were very soft, diffuse lights. And so there was this feeling of moving into an environment that was coming from a very different worldview, a very different way of being. And then living with Taita Alberto and his community, the perfect self-sufficiency of the people was very inspiring. They grew their own food, made their own clothing. Everything that their ancestors had been doing for thousands of years, they were still doing. And this is not true of all the Quechua people by any means, but it was true in the community, in the rural area of Ecuador, where I spent most of the time on the journeys that I took to Ecuador. Most of the time, we were only in Quito as we were traveling through to get to the rural communities. Yes. And a very, very empowering way of living, not dependent on electricity, not dependent on any services, even though they do have those services now and they love those services, you know, but they were not dependent on them. They would survive without modern convenience just fine.
Wow.
And so much knowledge about plants, how to grow things, just extraordinary.
And I'm curious about like just their attitude towards life, how that is different from what we typically find here in the United States.
Well, the people who are still following the ancient traditions are fewer, but there's within that community, within those who are still following these ancient traditions, the spiritual traditions, there is an incredible sense of reverence for everything. And everything that they do has meaning. For example, making soup, the women would stir the pot in a clockwise direction while they were making the soup, because moving in that direction is the direction of building. It's the direction of creation. It's the direction of nurturing. And when they were cleaning the pot, they would clean the pot in a counterclockwise direction, because that is the direction of undoing and of cleansing. The colors of the clothing that they wear, at a certain age, there is a certain color that in the ribbons in the tunic. Every 7 years, the color changes. Not cutting the hair. For the only time the hair would be cut, a child's hair would be cut, would be if the child had erred in some way. And then only a very tiny bit would be cut, and it was not meant as a punishment. It was just to cleanse that energy that would have been collected because the human being had made an error. So there needed to be some way of releasing that. And it was to take just a little bit of the hair and put it into a fire.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Interesting. I guess I have a lot of errors in my life.
Perfectly
cleansed. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's so fascinating how with the cultures that have really kept their indigenous traditions, have kept their ties to the past, how some of those, even just basic things, like being intentional about all the little things that we do in life, how much we've lost that in modern society and how rich it is when that's preserved somewhere.
Absolutely. And it's similar to mindfulness practice that we learn from the Buddhist tradition. Yeah. But the deep teaching in the Quechua tradition is that every action, every thought, every word is emanating from our whole self. And so the way that we treat our being through being reverent, through giving thanks to the sun, to the water, earth, to the air, the four elements, is harmonizing our being. And then our thoughts are more harmonized, our words are more, our actions are more harmonized. So it's being in rapport with the natural world, with the way things work, not trying to manipulate it or dominate it, not turning it into something mechanical, but actually receiving, knowing how to participate in the reciprocal give and take of life. And that helps harmonize the human being. And then the human being is doing less harm.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And how long did you stay there that first time?
The first trip, I think I was there for, it wasn't any longer than 10 days. It might have only been a week.
Wow.
But when I got on the plane to come home, not that I was, you know, consciously at that moment reviewing anything. It's just I'm on the plane and suddenly this awareness comes in that I felt like I had just passed through seven-year cycles. That the experience of being there during that very short in mainstream time chronological was an extraordinary transformation that one might expect over 49 years, you know, which is 49, seven-year cycles is in the I Ching. That's revolution. When you get to number 49, you start over again.
Was it difficult coming back to Michigan after that? Like, did it take you some time to adjust being back home?
It was a little bit challenging, but not distressingly so. One of the things that I noticed the first day that I was home, as I was driving my car, I suddenly my vision was extremely clear. And it was as if I had been driving a car with a dirty windshield and hadn't known that the windshield was dirty. But there was a shift in my own way of perceiving.
Nice.
And of course, I had young children, relatively young children at that time. So coming home, I'm immediately back into the nurturing and the mothering and the gardening. So it felt relatively smooth. It didn't feel, it was like I had been assisted while I was in Ecuador, while I was with Taita Alberto, and that helped me when I was home.
I gotcha. And had you decided that you were going to go back to Ecuador, like from that first trip right away, or was that something that more happened later?
The first thing that happened was that I invited Taita Alberto to come to my home to teach, and I organized a workshop. So he came to, I'd have to look in my records, but it might have been November that he came.
Oh, okay.
It was, yeah, I knew that I was going to continue the path. The form wasn't yet known, but the first step was to invite him to come teach.
Gotcha. Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. We're going to take our next break. When we come back, let's talk about what did you learn from Taita Alberto, and how did that, what is that message that he shared with you that he wanted you to put out there into the world that ended up being, you know, turned into this wonderful book. So everyone, please.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax?
Sorry, did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.
Please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. My guest this hour is Dr. Martha Travers, author of the book Shamanic Teachings of the Condor. And we'll be right back in just a moment.
Hey, everybody. It's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A-Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A-Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, as we speak with Dr. Martha Travers. So Dr. Travers, after that initial sort of visit, and then you brought Taita Alberto here, that ended up lasting a long time. Your relationship with him, your study with him, what was the heart of the message that you really got from Taita Alberto, and why did you feel so called to share it with other people?
So the center of the practices is in the Spanish sentir, to feel. And when Taita Alberto first spoke that, and then that was at the very first workshop that I did with him before I traveled to South America, my mind said, emotion, feel, you know, oftentimes we translate in English or we understand in English from to feel, to have an emotional sense. But that's not what he was just referring to. And I learned quickly that he meant something quite different. He was referring to the intuition, our intuitive capacity. And in the Quechua tradition, this is aligned with the heart. To speak of the heart is not to speak of emotions. It's to speak of our intuitive ability to sense our connection with all of life and to be able to know our life path. And it's not a mental, abstract process. It is a physical process of learning how to open the channel, the energetic channel between ourselves and each of the elements, the earth, the fire, the water, and the air. So the practices that we did with him had to do with connecting with nature through our food, through the water element, the water that we drink, the water that we bathe in. He would refer to the rivers in our body and not polluting the rivers in our body. The way that we would relate with the breath, with as in meditation and other traditions, there are breathing practices. And also the air element, as it is experienced in the movement of our day from being maybe indoors to being outdoors, the fire element, the sun, the heat in our body. The teaching is very, very simple and very profound at the same time. And it's important to understand that all of these elements are in our bodies, as well as being experienced by us and what we experience as outside of ourselves. And also that in order to connect, we do not have to be in a park, in the woods, in the country. We can be in the city. We can be in a high-rise apartment. We can be in a hospital. We can be in a very enclosed environment. And we always have all four elements with us. And as we learn these practices of connection, then our intuitive ability, which is part of the natural human capacity of the heart and the mind together, are the way that human beings have survived as a species, by having both of those faculties cleansed and active and effective. So the practices help us develop sentir, the ability to feel. And that way we know whether we're in the right place and doing the right thing. We sense.
And I take it that the opening up to that feeling of that intuition, it's something actually in the body, isn't it? It's not something really in the mind. It's more, I guess why he says feel is because you feel it in your body, right?
Yes. And it's also psychic. It's the intuitive ability it's like that moment of a person maybe being in a sort of casual state of mind and planning on entering a restaurant, and they go through the door and they're in good spirits and they walk in and all of a sudden they feel like, this is not the place for me. I don't need to be here. Something's not right. That's the intuition. So it is a very powerful sense that we experience, that cleansing the channels, which is part of working through the body. So cleansing the energetic channels then makes it possible for that person's intuition to be alive and well. And this is part of the teachings we have in North America from the Haudenosaunee people, the Iroquois people, that we do not do something if it will not be good seven generations hence. You know, many of us have heard the seven generations teaching, that when the elders were considering whether or not a change would be made in the way the community was doing a certain thing, let's say maybe with agriculture, it would be considered based on, will it be good seven generations hence? And if there was a feeling that they weren't certain, it might be or it might not be, then it would not be done. It had to be a really clear, yes, this will be good, or it would not be done. And so the analogy that I make with this, and this is to help us understand the heart and the intuition, is that the Manhattan Project, designing the atom bomb, the elders, those who would have the mind and the heart in balance, would have known immediately that this was not a good idea.
Right.
It would not have been done. And so these teachings are about, and this is the prophecy of the condor and the eagle. These teachings are helping human beings remember. It's not changing. Mm-hmm. It's not making us different from how we innately are. It's helping us access the wholeness that we are, that includes the heart, that includes the intuition, so that the intellect, the mind, that brilliant ability that the human species has, does not get out of balance and do harm.
Right, right. It's the same way there are the four archetypal elements. There's heart, mind, body, and spirit. And it's knowing that all of them have something to contribute, and no one aspect is greater than any other aspect. It's about integrating and harmonizing all four of them to truly serve us in our day-to-day life.
Exactly.
So I'm curious, as you studied all these years with Tati Alberto and you know, traveled to Ecuador and came back, was there something in this exploration, in this journey, that was healing for yourself? Was there something that, like, for you, helped you to heal, I don't know, traumas from the past or challenges that you've had in your life?
Absolutely. The process, I went to Ecuador many times, and I would sometimes take groups with me. One of my children went with me one time. The process of being in that environment, living with people who had such a connection to the earth, the food, the actual transformation of the body through the food, the sense of harmonizing and what that feels like. So to me, it would be like a tuning fork that you would be in. And I was experiencing people who I could then resonate my own sense of self and energy more clearly, because they were like that tuning fork. I was able to, that's what it's like. That's how it feels to be so peaceful inside, or careful and not doing damage unconsciously so much. So yes, it helped me. It continues to help me all the time. The experiences that I had with Tita Alberto and the teachings and the practices. And this is what I share in the book, are the actual practices that people can do to help heal body, mind.
And you mentioned before, and I talked about it, that the prophecy of the eagle and the condor, that when the eagle of the north meets the condor of the south, what's supposed to happen, and what, how did Tati Alberto explain that prophecy?
So the ancient teachings are that a time would come, and this was 500 years. This was before the Spaniards came into South America. This mythology, this teaching, this prophecy already existed. That there would come a time when the ancient teachings and the powerful practices would need to be put to sleep, because there was going to be an incursion of forces that were going to create a very great imbalance. But that at the end of that 500 years, there would be a new 500-year period. And during that time, the condor, the people who are most connected to the earth and the intuition, would be able to help the eagle, the people who are most connected to technology and the mind, to regain their heart. And the eagle would help the condor develop the mind. So there was never a feeling of it as some kind of heart is better than mind, the two together. So the teaching is that a time would come when the condor and the eagle would fly together in the same sky. And that time has come. 1989 is the year that the elders identified as being now time for the condor to come forward and start teaching and calling the eagle to come to their land, and for the condor to visit the land of the eagle.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's interesting. I know. Was it 87 or 89 was considered the harmonic convergence, you know, the alignment of the planets. So a lot of things sort of shifted at that time.
87 was the harmonic convergence, and 1989 is the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Oh, right. Yeah. Just a quick question before we go to break. As you've tried to expose people here in the United States to these teachings and share what you've learned from the Quechua and from Tati Alberto, what's the reaction been? Have people been open? Have people been skeptical? Have people been like, oh, this is nonsense? What's been the general sort of reaction you've gotten to people as you've shared these teachings and experience you've had?
So the in terms of numbers of people, the largest number that I work with are students at the University of Michigan. And I've been teaching there for 20 years now. Mm-hmm. The person who hired me was on that first journey to Ecuador, long story short. So it was very unexpected that I came back to the university after being away for 10 years to teach meditation and various contemplative practices. And one of my classes is shamanism and nature-based practice. So I have these beautiful young people who are highly stressed. We have a setting. Fortunately, we're in a small building in a park-like setting. And so they go outdoors for part of class and do the practices. And it's not preaching. It's not proselytizing. It's not saying this is what you're supposed to think or this is a belief system. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm inviting you to go outside and lie down on the ground if it's a beautiful day, or go outside and stand, you know, by the first tree, plant, or shrub that calls your attention. So they're very simple practices. They come back into the room and we have conversation. And invariably, students will say that they suddenly felt like they were a child again. And there's a happiness, there's an elevation of spirit and pleasure just from being outdoors for half an hour on a warm spring day at the University of Michigan. So my experience is that I don't try to convince anybody of anything, but that I attempt to share a practice that they can then, when they're doing the practice, see what their own experience is and draw their own conclusions.
Beautiful, wonderful. And I'm sure you get a very positive response to those kinds of experiences. Okay, we're going to take our last break of the show. When we come back, I actually want to talk a little bit more about the book itself. Like, who is this written for? What do you hope people get from this book? I mean, it's great. We've talked a little bit about it. And I actually have a question for you about what exactly is shamanism in your view? Because a lot of people use the term and don't necessarily understand where it comes from. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been speaking this hour with author and teacher, Dr. Martha Travers, author of the book, Shamanic Teachings of the Condor. And we'll be right back to finish this all up in just a moment.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be Frank About Health with all of you.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Yeah. You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. So, Dr. Travers, you wrote this book, Shamanic Teachings of the Condors. Let's just define our terms a little bit. Like, what exactly is a shaman?
So the word shaman, to the degree that I know, is thought to actually be a word that anthropologists sort of picked up and began using in a very generalized way to refer to a role that in individual communities can be quite different. Mm-hmm. And so it's sometimes thought of as too general to really be that helpful. In the community that I was introduced to, the Quechua community in Ecuador, Yachak is the word that is used in their language to describe the role of the person who has the responsibility of medicinal healing, physical healing, and emotional healing, and spiritual is implicit in that in the community. And then Taita Yachak is a person who has the responsibility to train Yachaks and to hold the well-being of the entire indigenous community, wherever they are geographically. And an analogy that seems accurate is the Yachak to Taita Yachak is similar to a Lama and a Dalai Lama. Alberto was the Taita Yachak. But there are many Yachaks, many people who are on the path and who are very experienced.
Right. And I just also want to be clear, because nowadays what's all the rage is about, you know, going down to the Amazon and the indigenous cultures and doing ayahuasca and working with plant medicines, the psychoactive plant medicines. And that's not necessarily what you're talking about when you're talking about working with the plants, are you?
Exactly. This is a beautiful topic. It's a big topic. Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm just going to try to give a little bit of it. The teaching is that you can sit with a plant, and as you're doing the practice that Taita Alberto was teaching us, the communion that you start to experience, you don't need to ingest the plant in order to move into whatever healing state is the healing state that you need. This is not to in any way find fault with or denigrate practices where people are ingesting the plant. But it's really important to understand that those practices often were that the medicine person in the community was the one who would actually ingest the plant in order to understand what the ailment, the nature of the spiritual ailment was that an individual or a community was experiencing. It wasn't so much give the ayahuasca to the individual who's out of balance. It was that the medicine person would use it in order to have deeper levels of perception. And sometimes, yes, indeed, the whole community might be participating in the ceremony. But they are very, very ancient. They were very carefully done. And what Taita Alberto would say about this was that it's only in very rare situations that there is an actual need for a person to ingest the plant. And shamanism, to me, if we're using that sort of general term that might trigger that association, oh, that's about taking ayahuasca, for example. Shamanism, to me, is about our intimate connection with the natural world being the healing agent, because we are nature. We are not mm-hmm. this being that is riding along on top of the planet that somehow is not the planet. We are right. Earth. We are right. nature. So shamanism, in my way of understanding it, is a tradition that may have very different specific practices, but that all participate in the same understanding that we are nature. Nature is a conscious presence, and nature is a healing force if we participate in a reverent way and in a reciprocal way where we are not doing harm to the natural world.
Right, right. And with all the challenges with the environment and climate change these days, it's actually more important than ever before to be more mindful of our impact on the environment and on nature around us, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it also is a responsibility that is very profound that will help us rebalance the imbalances if each individual human being brings themselves into right relationship with all of our kin, then the planet it'll be easier for the planet to come back into harmony.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. We only have a couple of minutes left, but I really did want to ask you about who you wrote the book for and what do you hope they get out of the book?
So my intention was to write in a way that would give the reader as close as possible the actual experience of being in the Andes. The book focuses primarily on my first journey. So it's a travel narrative in this middle section of the book. And that to me is the most important part of the book. It's like, if you can feel what I felt, then I feel that storytelling is a way that we actually activate energetically the same experience in the person who's listening, reading, feeling the story. The story is a chant. It's a transformative experience.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. The book is The Shamanic Teachings of the Condor, Encounters with the Mystical Traditions of the Andes. Dr. Travers, thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show today. It's been a pleasure having you, and I wish you all the success in the world. If people want to learn more about your teachings and more about what you're offering, where can they go? What can they find more information?
They can go to my website, which is natureandhealing.org.
Natureandhealing.org. We'll make sure to have that in the show notes. And again, the book is available everywhere that major books are sold, online, in your favorite bookstore. Go support the independent bookstores. That would be wonderful. Dr. Travers, thank you so much. I wish you all the best and all the success.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in each week. Without you, there is no show. I so appreciate you. And don't forget, if you did miss any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc or on all the major podcasting platforms. Thank you all for tuning in. Take care. We will talk to you all next week.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be Frank About Health with all of you.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Brancu, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.